Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us on our weekly journey that we call Living Hope. A journey designed to provide hope, inspiration, and education for those living with pancreatic cancer. Sharing the real-life stories of those really affected by this deadly disease and how they deal with it on a daily basis. With one woman who's been on this journey longer than most, a 20-year survivor, Roberta Luna. Welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
So today we're going to do something different. We had a guest drop out at the last minute, so we thought rather than just rerun a show, let's do something different here. Let's create an educational piece about not just the journey, but the start. What is pancreatic cancer? I never heard of this till I met you, quite honestly. I never heard of the pancreas till I met you.
A lot of people don't know. I didn't even know until it affects you. I don't think we even give it any thought at all, what the pancreas does. But pancreatic cancer begins when abnormal cells in the pancreas grow and then divide out of control and they form a tumor. Tumors can either be benign or malignant. Malignant tumors are abnormal but cannot invade other parts of the body, whereas a malignant tumor grows out of control and can spread to other tissues and organs.
The cancer spreads.
Right. And even when the cancer spreads to other areas of the body, like into the liver or lymph nodes, it could be still called pancreatic cancer if that's where it started.
That I didn't know. I thought it would metastasize, morph into something different. You'd now have breast cancer. You'd now have cancer in your lymph nodes, whatever that's called.
Yeah, if it started in the pancreas, it can end up in the liver, the breast, the lymph nodes, other organs, but it would be still classified as pancreatic cancer.
So let me ask you, I'm going to react to a couple of these things here. This is a show to bring out the myths and realities, what it is, what it's not. And maybe this is something people can refer back to. Maybe this is a kind of show that people start with when they're on this journey. What is the pancreas? So what is the pancreas?
The pancreas is an organ. It's located in, it's deep in the abdomen, more behind your stomach, and it lays more on your back and around the spine. It makes the enzymes that helps digest food and the hormones that control the blood sugar levels. So it's a very important organ that we really need to have. So
why do we never talk about it? We hear about the heart, the lungs, the other organs in our, the liver. I never hear anybody talk about, hey, how's your pancreas?
And you probably don't until somebody starts to have a problem with it, and then that's when most people want to know, what is the pancreas, what does it do, where is it? It's not until we start having an issue with the pancreas that we question.
A couple other little organs I never hear much about, but more than I hear the pancreas, the gallbladder, until suddenly it explodes one day and you got to remove it. What the heck is the gallbladder? I'm not even sure what it is. Sort of like an extra sac, I think, that keeps something, bile or something, in it. I'm not. You can live without your gallbladder.
Yeah, that you can live without. I mean,
Can't live without your pancreas.
Well, you can actually. You become a diabetic as soon as they remove the pancreas, so you can live without it. It's just it's a very important organ. So if they have to remove it, you have to go on enzymes for digestion, and a lot of people have to go on. Well, if they remove the full pancreas, you have to go on insulin. You become a diabetic.
So one of the questions I've heard over and over again, as we've talked about this show, as I've talked to people about it, is, what's the big deal? Like breast cancer, you just got to get to it early enough before it spreads, and we remove it. You remove the breast lump, and you're probably safe. You remove the lump in your lymph nodes, you're probably safe. You remove the brain tumor, it's harder, but you're probably safe. Why can't, when I discover I have pancreatic cancer, why can't I just cut this out?
A lot of it depends on the location of where the tumor is in the pancreas, for one. And the fact of when it was diagnosed, a lot of times because the symptoms are so vague, it can lead to the thought of other things before people even think
about cancer. Yeah, so it's spread. We'll talk about that in a minute, the importance of getting this. But you've talked repeatedly about the first thing when they determine it's pancreas cancer and not something else, is not many of them can go through the surgery to remove, what's it called, the Whipple surgery?
Yes, the Whipple.
Named after George Whipple? No, I don't know.
No, it's a doctor that invented the surgery many years ago, and it's still...
Mr. Whipple, from so I'm always thinking of from Charmin Tissue.
No, not the toilet paper man.
But, all right, so this is an operation, and he figured out how to remove... Does he remove the tumor, or does he remove the whole pancreas?
It depends on the situation where the tumor is located. Sometimes they can remove, if it's just in the tail, they can just remove part of the tail with the tumor. the location is very important in the fact of if it has spread or not. Generally, if the cancer has spread to another organ, they're not generally going to do
because that doesn't solve the problem. Right. But again, I want to kind of zero in on this because you've had many guests, and the first thing you say, once they're diagnosed, they have to determine, can you get this Whipple surgery or not? Can you get this surgery to remove it? And many couldn't. You couldn't.
No, because of the location. My tumor happens to be entwined with the artery and the veins that run through the pancreas, which many people are. So that's why, one of the reasons why it would not be resectable or be able to go in and remove it through surgery.
But why not just remove the whole organ? I guess that's what I'm still struggling with. If I don't need it to survive, why not just cut the whole darn thing out? Even if the tumor is intertwined with this organ in a way I can't remove just the tumor, why not pull the whole thing out then?
Well, like I said, you can remove the whole pancreas, and if you do, then you become a diabetic.
Right.
Then you would have to take enzymes. There are probably many reasons why that's not doable for a lot of people. Being not a doctor, I can't speak on that. I can only tell you.
Listened week after. I get why the tumor itself is entangled and I can't get at it.
Yeah.
It's too difficult to cut out. The arteries are running through it, and it's not something I can just snip off. It's wound its way. It's entangled itself in other things here. But I keep thinking, as I've heard the show, this is my misconception. We'll just cut the whole thing.
Yeah.
You can't cut your heart out because I need that. You can't cut your lungs out. But you can cut your gallbladder out because you can live without that. It may not be convenient or easy, but it sounds like you could live without it. So we should have somebody come on and talk about why don't they just go in and cut everything out?
I think one of the reasons why they probably would not remove the whole thing is that at that point it could be because it's already spread to other organs.
Clearly, yeah, at that point.
So that would be one reason why they would not be able to remove it.
So let's go back to the other problem you've talked about repeatedly. I know you got some other things on your list, but I'm going to get a couple off of my list here. And that is, people don't discover it until late. Women are taught now to notice as they're washing
themselves. Self-breast exam.
Yeah, whatever. Men with their testicles and other sorts of things. Oh, there's a lump. I feel it. You don't feel this. I can't feel my pancreas. It's behind my stomach. It's in my back somewhere there. I can feel it. Something happens. Usually very minor kinds of things. My back hurts. Give us the typical symptoms that say it might be a pancreas.
Well, yeah, a lot of it is backache. But a lot of times, especially in somebody who's very active, like a runner or physically active, then they put it off as maybe a pulled muscle.
Sure.
Or something else that's not something they're going to think about. But some other symptoms could be jaundice, which is, the yellowing of the skin of the eyes, which usually happens when the bile duct is blocked.
Right.
Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation.
I get those
itching.
Things for lots of itching. Yeah, I got an itchy back. Oh, I'll bet you get a pancreatic cancer. No, I got to put some cream on it. That's all I got to do. So the symptoms are kind of mild in the beginning. They're annoying, but they're not. Other than jaundice, that's pretty serious and strange. There aren't a lot of things that cause jaundice, I don't think. But itching, back pain, I can write it off for lots of things. So we ignore it, we don't diagnose it correctly, and now it has spread. It's gotten too big, it's spread to other parts of the body. Is that why you think this is among the more deadlier cancers? 9 out of 10 people at this point in time will not survive after they're diagnosed?
I think so, because it is so hard to find, like you say, when you're laying down and the doctor's examining you, generally they're not going to feel it unless it happens to be either extremely big or you happen to be extremely small. They did at the end of my mom's life be able to feel it finally, because she'd lost so much weight and the tumor had grown. But generally when you go in for the exam and they push around on your stomach, they're not going to feel it. It's usually
And you're
small.
Not going to feel it.
No,
there's no way you can
not.
Do a self-exam and see, I notice a lump. There's other things we're all checking now, spots and, for skin cancer, melanomas and stuff here, and breast cancer and testicular cancer, other sorts of things. We're more and more trained to check ourselves out.
Right.
But this is not something probably anybody can check out.
No, it's not like you said, you can't do a self-exam and you're not generally going to feel it. So
there's nothing today I should be doing to determine whether I have this.
Just watch the symptoms. And if you're concerned, if you have any of these symptoms really, and there's no explanation, like sudden weight loss or, again, with the stomach issues, there's no real reason for it, then be concerned and talk to your doctor about wanting to have your pancreas checked.
And that's what you did.
I did.
I suspect that one of the reasons you are among the survivors is you didn't sit lightly when you went to the doctor and you said, ah, that's nothing.
No, but it was, I think, and I don't know if it made a difference, and I think it probably did. After losing three family members to it, I was a little bit more, I think, aware, whereas I hadn't been before. Like when my dad was diagnosed, I had no clue.
Fearful, maybe, even, I'm going to get this, because we still don't know if it's hereditary or not.
No, and at the time I was being told it wasn't. Now we know there's probably a 10 to 12% chance that it could be hereditary.
Okay.
But not knowing at that time, and after losing the three family members and having vague symptoms of my own, it became very concerned. And
but you kind of insisted when the doctor kind of said, well, we'll look at other things. You could please look at this. First.
Yeah, well, one thing you wanted to rule out was being pregnant, and I knew I wasn't pregnant because I've been pregnant and never had diarrhea with pregnancy. I don't think that's most women have ever had that, but
okay.
The fact too,
I don't know, never been pregnant. I don't know what happens.
But then when he suggested let's look at your gallbladder, I had to remind him he'd already removed it, so I know it wasn't my gallbladder. So,
doc, you want to look over here?
Yeah, so it's just something being concerned and not wanting to sit and wait because. We saw what my dad went through, and I know I've said before, my dad was a tall man. He weighed 175 yeah. pounds. When he died, he weighed 75 pounds, and he looked like a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah,
I didn't want to put my family through that and watch that and
or
have them watch
through
that.
It or anybody. All right, so is perhaps some of the education from this show and your advocacy to get it caught earlier, and that means don't dismiss anything, don't be paranoid, but pay attention. What's going on in your body, and maybe the medical profession should put this a little higher on their list. They're putting it way down on the list. It's your gallbladder. It's this. Doctor, we took my gallbladder out. All right, well, I don't know. Let's try something else. It wasn't on top of mind. It wasn't in their top 10.
No, it wasn't. And even after telling them I've lost three family members, they were looking at the fact that they didn't feel at that time it was hereditary, and I was in my 40s, so I was too young. We don't see this until you're older, like in your 70s. And
yeah.
So it was putting them to make them realize that not everybody fits that cookie mold where, you know, and if you're having these symptoms and there's no other explanation, instead of waiting, it took them 6 to 8 months to diagnose my dad. I think if they would have looked at that maybe sooner, maybe he would have survived longer. Maybe he wouldn't have had such a horrible experience.
Yeah. Because if you catch it earlier, what? What can I do if I catch it early? Maybe I can cut it out, one.
Yeah, if you catch it earlier, maybe there's possibility of surgery. Maybe chemo, radiation, whatever, you know.
Easier to zap because it's smaller or whatever. It's more contained.
Hopefully that getting in there and getting it earlier, getting the treatment will give us, you know, a longer survival rate.
Anything I can do, I'm still encouraging you to do some shows on alternatives. You had somebody come in and talk about lots of alternatives, some of which are just flat out crazy, some of which are a waste of time, some of which might be intriguing. You yourself tried some alternatives. You've had a couple of guests hint at some things from positive mindset to changing your diet to Eastern medicine, I don't know, other sorts of things, witch doctors waving a stick over you, whatever. Is there anything that you know of today? If you told me, God forbid, Paul, you got pancreatic cancer, we're going to try and cut it out. Oh, we can't. We're going to try and radiate it, and that may be a work. What can I do proactively?
Well, I think being aware of your own body, you know your body better than anybody else,
right.
So making sure you get in there. But seeking out what is the best treatments, and if you're not really concerned or you don't like what the first doctor is telling you, go get a second opinion, go get a third opinion, go get something until you feel that they are putting your best interest at heart and they are looking at what you want, not so much what they feel you should be doing, but what is going to help you survive. I added holistic medicine years, actually.
And what
after.
Does that mean? What is holistic medicine?
For me, what it was is the...
Because that can mean many things.
Yeah, it can, and I think you have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was going to somebody with a great reputation, you know, who's licensed, permitted, and...
And what did they do?
They did blood work, they did scans, they did pretty much everything that my other doctors had done, but they wanted fresh tests, they wanted them done a little bit differently and looked at them.
And in their holistic approach, they did what? One I know with vitamins.
They added vitamins, supplements. The thing, I know it sounds weird, that really did help too was yoga and meditation.
See,
I mean,
that's right. Yeah, this mindset or this... I remember reading years ago the late, great Gilda Radner, who died of, I forgot what cancer, breast cancer, so I don't know which kind of cancer she died of.
Yeah. I almost want to say cervical, but I better not, so I'm not sure.
I know it was a cancer, and it was a really ugly one.
It was bad, yeah, it was bad.
And she wrote books about this and stuff. My wife was enthralled with it. Everybody liked Gilda Radner. Mm-hmm. And, she went to the University of Michigan, where I went here. She, I didn't know her, but anyway, I felt a certain connection there. Anyway, she talked about this journey that she went on, trying to find and try everything. And a lot of it was mind over matter, picturing you beating the cancer, creating a positive outlook, not getting negative. And so many people believe that. So many people talk about it. I don't know if there's any science behind that or if it's just anecdotal or if it's just smoke and mirrors. But you if you decide you want to battle something, do you have to put yourself in the frame of mind to do battle? And what does that mean? Do you picture it? Do you chant? We had somebody, didn't I think they were talking about chanting.
Yeah, chanting, yeah. I haven't gone that far, but...
But something that you're... If there is some sort of... And that's certainly Eastern medicine. There's energy running through your body, your chi and stuff. You're directing this energy. You're directing your thoughts. You're directing your every... You're attacking it in your mind. Does any of that make sense?
It does. And for me, I mean, I can only speak on my experience. I saw my own situation change when I did add the yoga, the meditation, the positive. I mean, I was always a positive thinker, but even more so adding the supplements and the vitamins and changing. I mean, I gave up a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
I gave up my favorite Dr. Pepper drink.
Sugar,
which was really
many
difficult.
People think sugar feeds cancer.
A lot of doctors believe that. And, you know, it's something that when I made all these changes, my situation changed. My last chemo was in December 2018. And I started making those changes about midsummer.
Because I think that's a common question. If for those of you who are listening to this for the first time or sharing this with somebody who's just gotten diagnosed, and once you get through the shock and the denial, can't be, why me, or the anger, why me, then you either decide one of two things. I give up, I quit, that's just the way it is, I'll put my life in order and I'll do the best I can for whatever time is here. Or people like you, feisty, no, I'm not done yet. Who says I'm done yet? You seek out ways to do battle with the unknown, with the unseen. And part of that is putting yourself in a mental state of, all right, you had the woman who was a boxer.
Yeah.
Boy, that's all about boxing, is putting yourself in. Yes, you physically train, and yes, you learn how to do the moves and counteract, but a lot of it's mind over matter. You've got to put yourself in the frame, I'm going to win. You got to picture yourself winning.
You do, and I believe it's a combination of everything, you know, the mind over the matter, getting the proper treatment, getting a good support staff with your medical team, your personal support people.
So could you share with us, just walk us through, I just want to visualize what your visualizations look like. What does the doctor tell you to do? Do you see the cancer in your mind, and do you see yourself beating like an athlete? When my daughter was training to be a basketball player, she didn't make it to the, she made it to varsity, but she didn't make it beyond. The coaches would say, pictures of the ball going through. You get, see yourself winning. You know, you got to believe it. You can't just believe it. You got to picture it in your mind. I've had people say, I picture the cancer. I picture whatever it looks like to me, and I'm attacking it. I'm winning. And I said, what does the heck does that have to do with? And I said, well, it's all about putting that mindset and that winning mindset.
Yeah, I think it helps. I mean, I like the guest that we had that was the boxer. I could really relate to her because that's how I refer to my cancer. Whenever I talk about it, I'm in round 20.
Yeah, right.
So it's something that I refer to too. I have, I was given a boxing glove necklace, and, you know, so it's something that I refer. I totally understood where she was coming from. And I don't know if you remember when we were growing up, they had this little thing, it looked like a bozo or something, but you could punch it as a punching bag and it would come back and hit back at you.
Yeah.
It stood on the ground. It wasn't something that hung. It stood on the ground.
There's a name to it. I can't think of it either.
But what my visualization was that thing, but in the shape of a pancreas.
Hmm.
And I was, you know, I would continue to keep beating it and keep hitting it and keep hitting it. And I know it sounds weird, but it did help. It made me feel like I was doing something.
And is this a daily, like a mantra, a visualization, or just a mindset, a frame of mind that you're in, that I'm in battle now here? Or do you, I'm trying to understand, I've never been able to visualize things and just see myself doing something.
Right now, it's not a daily thing. It's like maybe when something comes up, but there for a while, it was like, you know, every day you do the meditation or whatever it is, you know, that gets you through.
And is it just calming yourself, or is it putting your mind in a different place?
It's both, actually. It puts your mind in a different place, and sometimes it's very difficult to do that because you have to remove everything, any sounds coming in from the house or anything that could be disruptive.
And all those little hamster wheels rolling in your head here. What if? Oh my God, that's going to be in the fear. I don't know that tension. I don't know that fear and anxiety makes it harder to win, but I believe it is.
Fear, I think, can make it stronger. I think the anxiety can be more of a negative, just because it's just something else that you have to fight. But you know, if you can,
I mean, do we make ourselves sick by getting ourselves? I've made myself sick in years ago. I get so anxious about something, my stomach's churning. Yeah. You can get an ulcer. You know, you have a heart attack. I mean, you can literally create something in your body. Bad things happen if you're just constantly tense and fearful and anxious and stuff.
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, the anxiety for me is bad. And there's a time when all of us, most of us survivors, are getting our scans that we have to do every so often. So they call it scanxiety because you're very anxious. And a lot of times, you know, it's they plan these on a Thursday, so you're going to have to go the whole weekend before you find out anything.
You're kidding me.
Oh, it can be difficult. But I think, for me, it's the anxiety is worse than the fear. I mean, if you fear something, but you can look at that fear in the eyes or whatever you want to justify and go for it, then sometimes that can give you that extra
fear
fight.
Fear sometimes
that you
motivates you or put you on alert, whereas anxiety just seems to depress you and turn you into a jellyfish. All right, so we talked about the pancreas, how hard it is to find, therefore it's, and the symptoms are easily dismissed as other things. We've talked about that at length. We'll keep talking about that because that's the problem, why it doesn't get diagnosed quicker. The doctors don't have it first in mind because this isn't statistically, in terms of raw numbers, this isn't as pervasive as other forms of cancer. There aren't as many people infected by this, right?
No, actually, in fact, this year they estimated that 62,000 Americans are expected to be diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. That's like 170 a day. And out of that, only 11% are going to survive 5 years or greater. Whereas if you're looking like at something like breast cancer, I looked it up earlier, and there's like 365,000 women that are diagnosed with breast cancer. So they always talk about pancreatic cancer being rare, and we don't think of it as being rare because we hear about it so much, but they base it on the numbers is where
just
they get
sheer
the
numbers.
Idea.
So there are cancers that more people get, and therefore I think about it more often, I put more dollars. That's part of the problem in curing this, finding an answer. Not enough people, not enough money for the drug companies, not enough doctors hear about it or see it. So it's not. That's why I knew you're always advocating more money and pay more attention to this. And they're like, yeah, let's go after the bigger fish here. Let's go after heart disease. Go after.
Well, we've done pretty well, actually, about getting, you know, the funding and going. We go every year to Advocacy Day in D.C. and talk to our representatives. So that is improving, but we need to improve it a great deal more. There are a lot of nonprofits out there that are doing great. I mean, you can go to PanCAN's website or you can go to Hirschberg's and see what they're doing as far as research. And it's really amazing how much it has changed. But we just need it, you know, faster and to come sooner. So,
well, those are my list. I ate up most of the half hour here. Give me some more highlights from your list. This is Pancreatic Cancer 101. We talk about what's the pancreas, how hard it is to diagnose, how few people think about it, so the doctor may not may think of four other things before. It may take 6 months for them to properly diagnose, in which case it's now grown, it's spread, and therefore it's more deadly. What other misconceptions or myths or things do people need to know when they hear this?
Well, I think a big myth is that nobody survives. That's one thing that you're always told, is nobody survives this, and you feel like you're getting a death sentence.
Which is why you say don't go to the internet immediately, because that's the message you're going to get loud and clear.
Right.
You're done.
Yeah, we try to, because you tell somebody not to go to the internet and research, that's the first thing they're going to do.
Yeah.
So we actually advise them to go to someplace like PanCAN.org or Hirschberg or Let's Win, some of the other nonprofits out there that have great up-to-date information that you can rely on. Don't just go Google and look at the first thing.
Right.
Find a reputable place to get your information and to contact and reach out to. I would also, you know, just be very aware of your own body. Nobody, again, like I said, nobody knows your body better than you do. So if something is happening, you need to get it checked out. If you have other family members that have been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, you need to insist that they start checking you sooner.
Pay attention. Don't let it be dismissed. Don't you dismiss it in your head or have somebody else dismiss it. Okay, good advice. Anything else about the pancreas or cancer in general? Here's a question that came up once a long time ago. Are all cancer cells the same? Is cancer just cancer, just cancer, whether it's in the brain or the breast or the pancreas? Is it the same? I guess I don't know what it is. It's something that's gone wrong in the cell that's killing me instead of I really don't even understand what a cancer cell, when it turns into cancer, what does that mean?
Oh, my understanding is when it turns into cancer is because, for one, you know, it keeps multiplying and not stopping. I think generally maybe all, you know, cancer cells share some similarities, but with pancreatic, it's been so difficult. I think I explained before, and my doctor explained it like being a hard-shelled peanut M&M to try to break through that to get the chemo through it so that they can, you know, eradicate.
There's an outer protective shell of this type of particular cancer. 'Cause, and the other thing, I suspect they're not all exactly the same, is because some cancers are detectable with a blood test.
Yeah, which, and this even self-exam, like prostate cancer came a long way when they developed the PSA.
Right.
Now they can, you know, men can go in and get the blood test rather than, along with the physical exam, but they can start with the blood test first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have a higher elevated level of something, whatever the PSA stands for.
And there is, for pancreatic cancer, I believe it's called the CA919. What it does is it keeps track of the tumor. It doesn't necessarily diagnose pancreatic cancer, but once you're diagnosed, they do this test pretty regular to see how the tumor is reacting to the treatment. And if it
so that's
reacting.
Clearly one of the holy grails that everybody hopes for, a breakthrough in a blood test of some sort, like prostate, where you could go in and, as they run a panel of tests on your blood, if they ran this particular test that doesn't exist right now, but if they created it and ran it, it would pop up and say, hey, we see the early stages of something here. Let's treat it. Let's radiate it. Let's cut it. Let's maybe change your diet so you're not feeding sugar to it and it won't grow or whatever. Yeah.
And there is a blood test they're working on. It's just not there yet. So hopefully, hopefully very soon we'll get it. Yes.
Okay. Anything else that, I don't even know what to say. You had such amazing stories here. Anything else you'd like to pass on in pancreatic cancer 101? Any other tips, any other thoughts, any other misconceptions or
Well, again, just like I said, be aware you're the best, your best own advocate. You know your body better than anybody else. If you have any concerns, don't be afraid to speak up. And if you're not getting listened to, find another doctor. Go get a second, third opinion, whatever it takes for you to feel like you're finally being listened to.
Does it help to go to groups and therapy? Does it help to handle it, to not just get information, what are you doing, how are you dealing with it, but to not feel alone, I'm the only one fighting? It must feel very lonely.
It does, and now there's a lot of support groups designated just for pancreatic cancer, which I would advise somebody to go to that regular than a general. But whatever works for you, you can contact patientservices@pancan.org. I know you'll give the number later, but you can contact them. Again, like I said, Hirschberg has, you know, groups that you can contact. So there's a lot of groups out there. I would suggest finding one that deals only with pancreatic cancer and not cancer in general. It makes it easier.
And I'll say the other eye-opener for me, I'll end with my own last thought as I've listened to this show week after week, is that it's not, yes, it's your journey. Yes, it's your struggle and your fight, and it's your life at stake here. I get all that. But the circle of people it affects around you, your husband, your family, your kids, your friends, your work, your community, I don't think we take that into account enough. And the impact that has, the disruption, the fear, the anxiety, the fights. Do this. No, I'm not going to do that anymore. I've tried that anymore, and, you know, whatever. Or the guilt. I didn't help enough. I didn't do enough. I should have done this. I could have done this. There's a lot of that that sits under the surface that seems to come up in these shows a lot here.
It is, because we've learned that it doesn't just affect the patient survivor. It's a family. Unfortunately, a family disease, because everybody is affected by it. Whether, like you say, they feel at loss because there's not a lot they can do. But, you know, as a survivor and also as a caregiver, I think being the caregiver is a much harder job between those two.
Yeah.
And I really do appreciate my caregivers, my husband, my sons, my family, my friends, and everybody that's been a part of this journey with me. Without them, I don't know if I could have
gotten to it. Having been a caregiver for my mom, my dad, my aunt, not with pancreatic cancer, but other deadly things, everything, you're always left with that, did I do enough?
Yeah. Well, what if?
What if? What if I found it sooner? What if I'd done more? I'm sorry the time I argued with him. I should have done this. I could have done this. There's a lot of that that goes on.
There is, but unfortunately, that's not going to change anything. So, you know, you just got to get over it and know that you did the best you could with what you had to work with. And just know that, again, as a survivor patient, we do appreciate our caregivers, and we couldn't get through all this without them. So.
Well, it's a journey. And
it
it's
is.
A journey that many people are on. It's not a solo journey. There are other people that can share with you that journey, their own experiences. You're not alone. And it's probably, unless you live alone and have nobody, it's probably affecting a lot of people around you, friends, family, community, whatnot. So embrace that. It's a journey, and journey with us together as we talk to more people who are on that journey. Yes. You've been on the journey for 20 years. Everybody looks at you as a trailblazer. Way out. Oh, if only I can get to that 20-year mile marker there like Roberta did here.
All right, we're going to get past that. We're going to keep going until we finally see an end and the cure for this disease, or at least some, you know, early detection tests, which would be really great.
I'll leave you with one last thought here. I keep having one more. My late father developed leukemia later in life, and told the family, and we all cried, and we thought, this is it, Dad's going to die, he's got leukemia. He lived for 20 years with leukemia. Leukemia had gotten to a point, at least his, it's in different versions. There's a deadlier version, and there's a less deadly version of it. I don't remember what the two of them are called. His was the less deadly version. It can switch. You can go from one to the other without any explanation why. But he was in the lower risk one. And the doctor said, we understand this one now. We can treat this one now. We know what to do and how to. You're not producing white blood cells, so you got to be smart. You got to stay away from people who are sick with colds and other things. You're more likely because you got to change some of your life. You got to change some of your diet. He stopped eating sugar and other things here. All these things you talk about. And the doctor said something that I hope they'll say about pancreatic cancer someday. The doctor looked at my dad and he said, "Trust me, something else will kill you long before this does. We know how to handle this one." And it was that he dealt with it successfully for his whole life, for 20 years or something. Yeah. So we tend to think of cancer as a death sentence. And in more and more cancers, we're finding a way to not just stop it or to throw it dead in its tracks here, but to deal with it and to handle it. Heart diseases and stuff. Yeah. People can live with heart diseases now for years and years and years. We got to get to a point where the doctor says, I know this is bad and I know this is serious, but trust me, something else will get you before this does.
Yeah, and we have a lot of doctors and researchers who believe that this will be a disease that will be
manageable.
Something that is manageable and treated and that we will not be dying from. Before we leave, real quick, I want to do two things. One is wish a happy 15th birthday to Trent Luna, who's been on our show and who lost his dad to pancreatic cancer just shortly after he was born.
Right.
We've had him on the show.
And he's not related to you.
No, he's not. We just share the same name. But I would be very proud of him to be a family member because he's a great young man.
Really?
He's gone to Advocacy Day with us a number of times and shared his story. He's turning 15 today.
Woo-hoo.
And a sophomore in high school, and we're just very proud of him. And I just wanted to wish him a happy birthday.
An example of how this affects people, he lost his parent, never met his dad, right?
No, he never. Well, he was a baby, so he didn't know him. His dad did get to hold him and whatnot, but Trent, I'm sure,
and he's carried on this fight on the name of a father that he grew up without.
Yes, I know he's done an excellent job. He's a young man I would be very proud to have as a family member, as a son.
Too.
But I'll claim him just because we shared the last name. And then also before we go, yesterday, August 17th, was National Nonprofit Day. I'd like to dedicate this episode to all those nonprofits that are out there working tirelessly on early detection and the ultimate goal to finding a cure. So
thank you. All right. Thank you for doing what you do. Tune in action every time. Tune in more. That's what I'm trying to say. Keep coming back. Too often, I think we think this is frightening, depressing, fearful. I don't want to hear about it. That's not the way to find your way through this journey. And if you or anybody you know needs help right now, there is a place to go. Lots of places to go. We'll give you one. Patient Services at 877-2, the number PAN, number 2, PANCN. Got me all shook up here. Patient Services, 877, the number 2, PANCAN, for the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. For the OC Talk Radio Network, I'm Paul Roberts. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for sharing this conversation, this journey with us. And I hope it brings you some help, comfort, relief, and shows you a path forward for you or someone you know or love. Share this story with someone today. Thanks. Come back again.